Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Classic Short Stories and Tales, and to 2020. We're starting the new year with two classic short stories. This one, The Little Mermaid, and a story called Long Odds by H. Rider Haggard. Soon after reading the H. Rider Haggard story, I received a terrific review from a grandmother who reads our stories to her four grandkids. And I'll share that review right after this show. Things did not go well for the lions in H. Rider Haggard's story, and I realized that our fans might need a choice, which inspired me to do The Little Mermaid. I was halfway through The Little Mermaid before I realized that I had done this one a couple of years ago. But when you've done over 700 stories, sometimes you can forget which ones you've done. But each time you do one, you get a little better. Thank you all for being great fans, and I'm looking forward to a really, really great year here at 1001 Stories Network. A good many of us have seen the Disney version of The Little Mermaid, but how many of us have ever heard The Little Mermaid, the original story, by Hans Christian Andersen? He wrote it in 1837, and for a long time, it was the most beloved of fairy tales. As you already know, it's about a mermaid willing to give up her life in the sea in exchange for a human soul and immortality. But it's quite different than the Disney story that you might be familiar with. And now, part one of The Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen. Far out in the ocean, the water is as blue as the petals of the loveliest cornflower, and as clear as the purest glass. But it is very deep, too. It goes down deeper than any anchor rope will go, and many, many steeples would have to be stacked one on top of the other to reach from the bottom to the surface of the sea. It is down there that the sea folk live. Now, don't suppose that there are only bare white sands at the bottom of the sea. No, indeed. The most marvelous trees and flowers grow down there, with such pliant stalks and leaves that the least stir in the water makes them move about as though they were alive. All sorts of fish, large and small, dart among the branches, just as birds flit through the trees up here. From the deepest spot in the ocean rises the palace of the Sea King. Its walls are made of coral, and its high-pointed windows of the clearest amber. But the roof is made of mussel shells that open and shut with the tide. This is a wonderful sight to see, for every shell holds glistening pearls, any one of which would be the pride of a queen's crown. The Sea King down there had been a widower for years, and his old mother kept house for him. She was a clever woman, but very proud of her noble birth. Therefore she flaunted 12 oysters on her tail, while the other ladies of the court were only allowed to wear 6. Except for this, she was an altogether praiseworthy person, particularly so because she was extremely fond of her granddaughters, the little sea princesses. They were 6 lovely girls, but the youngest was the most beautiful of them all. Her skin was as soft and tender as a rose petal, and her eyes were as blue as the deep sea. But like all the others, she had no feet. Her body ended in a fish tail. The whole day long they used to play in the palace, down in the great halls where live flowers grew on the walls. Whenever the high amber windows were thrown open, the fish would swim in, just as swallows dart into our rooms when we open the windows. But these fish, now, would swim right up to the little princesses to eat out of their hands and let themselves be petted. Outside the palace was a big garden, with flaming red and deep blue trees. Their fruit glittered like gold, and their blossoms flamed like fire on their constantly waving stalks. The soil was very fine sand indeed, but as blue as burning brimstone. A strange blue veil lay over everything down there. You would have thought yourself aloft in the air, with only the blue sky above and beneath you, rather than down at the bottom of the sea. When there was a dead calm, you could just see the sun like a scarlet flower with light streaming from its calyx. Each little princess had her own small garden plot where she could dig and plant whatever she liked. One of them made her little flower bed in the shape of a whale. Another thought it needed to shape hers like a little mermaid. But the youngest of them made hers as round as the sun. and there she grew only flowers which were red as the sun itself. She was an unusual child, quiet and wistful, and when her sisters decorated their gardens with all kinds of odd things they had found in the sunken ships, she would allow nothing in hers except flowers as red as the sun and a pretty marble statue. This figure of a handsome boy, carved in pure white marble, had sunk down to the bottom of the sea from some ship that was wrecked. Beside the statue she planted a rose-colored weeping willow tree, which thrived so well that its graceful branches shaded the statue and hung down to the blue sand, where their shadows took on a violet tint and swayed as the branches swayed. It looked as if the roots and the tips of the branches were kissing each other in play. Nothing gave the youngest princess such pleasure as to hear about the world of human beings up above them. Her old grandmother had to tell her all she knew about ships and cities, and of people and animals. What seemed nicest of all to her was that up on land the flowers were fragrant, for those at the bottom of the sea had no scent. And she thought it was nice that the woods were green, and that the fish you saw among their branches could sing so loud and sweet that it was delightful to hear them. Her grandmother had to call the little birds fish, or the princess would not have known what she was talking about, for she had never seen a bird. "When you get to be 15," her grandmother said, "you will be allowed to rise up out of the ocean and sit on the rocks in the moonlight to watch the great ships sailing by. You'll see woods and towns, too." Next year, one of her sisters would be 15, but the others, well, since each was a whole year older than the next, the youngest still had 5 long years to wait until she could rise up from the water and see what our world was like. But each sister promised to tell the others about all that she saw and what she found most marvelous on her first day. Their grandmother had not told them half enough, and there were so many things that they longed to know about. The most eager of them all was the youngest, the very one who was so quiet and wistful. Many a night she stood by her open window and looked up through the dark blue water where the fish waved their fins and tails. She could just see the moon and the stars. To be sure, their light was quite dim, but looked at through the water, they seemed much bigger than they appear to us. Whenever a cloud-like shadow swept across them, she knew that it was either a whale swimming overhead or a ship with many human beings aboard it. Little did they dream that a pretty young mermaid was down below, stretching her white arms up toward the keel of their ship. The eldest princess had her 15th birthday, so now she received permission to rise up out of the water. When she got back, she had 100 things to tell her sisters about, but the most marvelous thing of all, she said, was to lie on a sandbar in the moonlight when the sea was calm and to gaze at the large city on the shore where the lights twinkled like hundreds of stars and listen to music, to hear the chatter and clamor of carriages and people, to see so many church towers and spires, and to hear the ringing bells. Because she could not enter the city, that was just what she most dearly longed to do. Oh, how intently the youngest sister listened. After this, whenever she stood at her open window at night and looked up to the dark blue waters, she thought of that great city with all of its clatter and clamor, and even fancied that in these depths she could hear the church bells ringing. The next year, her second sister had permission to rise up to the surface and swim wherever she pleased. She came up just at sunset, and she said that this spectacle was the most marvelous sight she had ever seen. The heavens had a golden glow, and as for the clouds, she could not find words to describe their beauty. Splashed with red and tinted with violet, they sailed over her head. But much faster than the sailing clouds were wild swans in a flock. Like a long white veil trailing above the sea, they flew toward the setting sun. She, too, swam toward it. But down it went, and all the rose-colored glow faded from the sea and the sky. We'll be back right after these messages from our sponsors.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And now we return to The Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen. The following year, her third sister ascended, and as she was the boldest of them all, she swam up a broad river that flowed into the ocean. She saw gloriously green, vine-colored hills. Palaces and manor houses could be glimpsed through the splendid woods. She heard all the birds sing, and the sun shone so brightly that often she had to dive under the water to cool her burning face. In a small cove, she found a whole school of mortal children, paddling about in the water, quite naked. She wanted to play with them, but they took fright and ran away. Then along came a little black animal. It was a dog, but she had never seen a dog before. It barked at her so ferociously that she took fright herself and fled to the open sea. But never could she forget the splendid woods, the green hills, and the nice children who could swim in the water, although they didn't wear fish tails. The fourth sister was not so venturesome. She stayed far out among the rough waves, which she said was a marvelous place. You could see all around you for miles and miles, and the heavens up above you were like a vast dome of glass. She had seen ships, but they were so far away that they looked like seagulls. Playful dolphins had turned somersaults, and monstrous whales had sprouted water through their nostrils so that it looked as if hundreds of fountains were playing all around them. And finally, the fifth sister had her turn. Her birthday came in the winter time, so she saw things that none of the others had seen. The sea was a deep green color, and enormous icebergs drifted about. Each one glistened like a pearl, she said, but they were more lofty than any church steeple built by man. They assumed the most fantastic shapes and sparkled like diamonds. She had seated herself on the largest one, and all the ships that came sailing by sped away as soon as the frightened sailors saw her there with her long hair blowing in the wind. In the late evening, clouds filled the sky. Thunder cracked, and lightning darted across the heavens. Black waves lifted those great bergs of ice on high, where they flashed when the lightning struck. On all the ships, the sails were reefed, and there was fear and trembling. But quietly she sat there, upon her drifting iceberg, and watched the blue forked lightning strike the sea. Each of the sisters took delight in the lovely new sights when she first rose up to the surface of the sea. But when they became grown-up girls, who were allowed to go wherever they liked, they became indifferent to it. They would become homesick, and in a month they said there was no place like the bottom of the sea, where they felt so completely at home. On many an evening the older sisters would rise to the surface, arm in arm, all five in a row. They had beautiful voices, more charming than those of any mortal beings. When a storm was brewing, and they anticipated a shipwreck, they would swim before the ship and sing most seductively of how beautiful it was at the bottom of the ocean, trying to overcome the prejudice that the sailors had against coming down to them. But people could not understand their song, and mistook it for the voice of the storm. Nor was it for them to see the glories of the deep. When their ship went down, they were drowned, and it was as dead men that they reached the Sea King's palace. On the evenings when the mermaids rose to the water like this, arm in arm, their youngest sister stayed behind, all alone, looking after them and wanting to weep. But a mermaid has no tears, and therefore she suffers so much more. "Oh, how do I wish I were 15," she said. "I know I shall love that world up there, and all the people who live in it." And at last, she too came to be 15. "Now I'll have you off my hands," said her grandmother, the old queen dowager. "Come, let me adorn you like your sisters." In the little maid's hair she put a wreath of white lilies, each petal of which was formed from half a pearl. And the old queen let 8 big oysters fasten themselves to the princess's tail as a sign of her high rank. "But that hurts," said the little mermaid. "You must put up with a good deal to keep up appearances," her grandmother told her. Oh, how gladly she would have shaken off all these decorations and laid aside the cumbersome wreath. The red flowers in her garden were much more becoming to her, but she didn't dare to make any changes. "Goodbye," she said, and up she went through the water, as light and as sparkling as a bubble. The sun had just gone down when her head rose above the surface, but the clouds still shone like gold and roses, and in the delicately tinted sky sparkled the clear gleam of the evening star. The air was mild and fresh, and the sea unruffled. A great three-master lay in view, with only one of all its sails set, for there was not even a whisper of a breeze, and the sailors idled about in the rigging and on the yards. There was music and singing on the ship, and as night came on, they lighted hundreds of such brightly colored lanterns that one might have thought the flags of all nations were swinging in the air. The little mermaid swam right up to the window of the main cabin, and each time she rose with the swell, she could peep in through the clear glass panes at the crowd of brilliantly dressed people within. The handsomest of them all was a young prince with big dark eyes. He could not be more than 16 years old. It was his birthday, and that was the reason for all the celebration. Up on the deck the sailors were dancing, and when the prince appeared among them, 100 or more rockets flew through the air, making it as bright as day. These startled the little mermaid so badly that she ducked under the water. But she soon peeped up again, and then it seemed as if all the stars in the sky were falling around her. Never had she seen such fireworks. Great suns spun around, splendid firefish floated through the blue air, and all these things were mirrored in the crystal-clear sea. It was so brilliantly bright that you could see every little rope of the ship, and the people could be seen distinctly. Oh, how handsome the young prince was! He laughed, and he smiled and shook people by the hand, while the music rang out in the perfect evening. It got very late, but the little mermaid could not take her eyes off the ship and the handsome prince. The brightly colored lanterns were put out, no more rockets flew through the air, and no more cannons boomed. But there was a mutter and rumble deep down in the sea, and the swell kept bouncing her up so high that she could look into the cabin. Now the ship began to sail. Canvas after canvas was spread in the wind. The waves rose high. Great clouds gathered, and lightning flashed in the distance. Ah, they were in for a terrible storm, and the mariners made haste to reef the sails. The tall ship pitched and rolled as it sped through the angry sea. The waves rose up like towering black mountains, as if they would break over the masthead. But the swan-like ship plunged into the valleys between such waves, and emerged to ride their lofty heights. To the little mermaid this seemed good sport, but to the sailors it was nothing of the sort. The ship creaked and labored. Thick timbers gave way under the heavy blows. Waves broke over the ship. The mainmast snapped in two like a reed. The ship listed over on its side, and water burst into the hold. Now the Little Mermaid saw that people were in peril, and that she herself must take care to avoid the beams and wreckage tossed about by the sea. One moment it would be black as pitch, and she couldn't see a thing. Next moment the lightning would flash so brightly that she could distinguish every soul on board. Everyone was looking out for himself as best he could. She watched closely for the young prince, and when the ship split in two, she saw him sink down into the sea. At first she was overjoyed that he would be with her, but then she recalled that human people could not live under the water, and he could only visit her father's palace as a dead man. No, he should not die. So she swam in among all the floating planks and beams, completely forgetting that they might crush her. She dived through the waves and rode their crest until at length she reached the young prince, who was no longer able to swim in that raging sea. His arms and legs were exhausted. His beautiful eyes were closing, and he would have died had the Little Mermaid not come to help him. She held his head above water and let the waves take them wherever the waves went. At daybreak, when the storm was over, not a trace of the ship was in view. The sun rose out of the waters, red and bright, and its beam seemed to bring the glow of life back to the cheeks of the prince, but his eyes remained closed. The mermaid kissed his high and shapely forehead. As she stroked his wet hair in place, it seemed to her that he looked like that marble statue in her little garden. She kissed him again and hoped that he would live. She saw dry land rise before her in high blue mountains, topped with snow as glistening white as if a flock of swans were resting there. Down by the shore were splendid green woods, and in the foreground stood a church, or perhaps a convent. She didn't know which, but anyway it was a building. Orange and lemon trees grew in its garden, and tall palm trees grew beside the gateway. Here the sea formed a little harbor, quite calm and very deep. Fine white sand had been washed up below the cliffs. She swam there with the handsome prince, and stretched him out on the sand, taking special care to pillow his head up high in the warm sunlight. The bells began to ring in the great white building, and a number of young girls came out into the garden. The Little Mermaid swam away behind some tall rocks that stuck out of the water. She covered her hair and her shoulders with foam so that no one could see her tiny face, and then she watched to see who would find the poor prince. In a little while, one of the girls came upon him. She seemed frightened, but only for a minute. Then she called more people. The mermaid watched the prince regain consciousness and smile at everyone around him. But he did not smile at her, for he did not even know that she had saved him. She felt very unhappy, and when they led him away to the big building, she dived sadly down into the water and returned to her father's palace. She had always been quiet and wistful, and now she became so much more so. Her sisters asked her what she had seen on her first visit up to the surface. But she would not tell them a thing. Many evenings and many mornings she revisited the spot where she had left the prince. She saw the fruit in the garden ripened and harvested, and she saw the snow on the high mountain melted away. But she did not see the prince. So each time she came home sadder than she had left. It was her one consolation to sit in her little garden and throw her arms about the beautiful marble statue that looked so much like the prince. But she took no care of her flowers now. They outgrew the paths until the place was a wilderness, and their long stalks and leaves became so entangled in the branches of the tree that it cast a gloomy shade. Finally, she couldn't bear it any longer. She told her secret to one of her sisters. Immediately, all the sisters heard about it. No one else knew, except a few more mermaids who told no one, except their most intimate friends. One of these friends knew who the prince was. She, too, had seen the birthday celebration on the ship. She knew where he came from and where his kingdom was. "Come, little sister," said the other princesses. Arm in arm, they rose from the water in a long row, right in front of where they knew the prince's palace stood. It was built of pale, glistening golden stone with great marble staircases, one of which led down to the sea. Magnificent glit domes rose above the roof, and between the pillars all around the building were marble statues that looked most lifelike. Through the clear glass of the lofty windows, one could see into the splendid halls with their costly silk hangings and tapestries, and walls covered with paintings that were delightful to behold. In the center of the main hall, a large fountain played its columns of spray up to the glass-domed roof, through which the sun shone down on the water and upon the lovely plants that grew in the big basin. Now that she knew where he lived, many an evening and many a night she spent there in the sea. She swam much closer to shore than any of her sisters would dare venture, and she even went far up a narrow stream under the splendid marble balcony that cast its long shadow in the water. Here she used to sit and watch the young prince when he thought himself quite alone in the bright moonlight. On many evenings she saw him sail out in his fine boat, with music playing and flags aflutter. She would peep out through the green rushes, and if the wind blew her long silver veil, anyone who saw it mistook it for a swan spreading its wings. On many nights she saw the fishermen come out to sea with their torches, and heard them tell about how kind the young prince was. This made her proud to think that it was she who had saved his life when he was buffeted about, half dead among the waves. And she thought of how softly his head had rested on her breast, and how tenderly she had kissed him, though he knew nothing of all this, nor could he even dream of it. Increasingly she grew to like human beings, and more she longed to live among them. Their world seemed so much wider than her own, for they could skim over the sea in ships, and mount up into the lofty peaks, high over the clouds, and their land stretched out in woods and fields, farther than the eye could see. There was so much she wanted to know. Her sisters could not answer all her questions, so she asked her old grandmother, who knew about the upper world, which was what she said was the right name for the countries above the sea. "If men aren't drowned," the little mermaid asked, "do they live on forever? Don't they die, as we do down here in the sea?" "Yes," the old lady said. "They too must die, and their lifetimes are even shorter than ours. We can live to be 300 years old, but when we perish, we turn into mere foam on the sea, and haven't a grave down here among our dear ones. We have no immortal soul, no life hereafter. We are like the green seaweed. Once cut down, it never grows again. Human beings, on the contrary, have a soul which lives forever, long after their bodies have turned to clay. It rises through thin air, up to the shining stars, just as we rise through the water to see the lands on earth. So men rise up to beautiful places unknown, which we shall never see." "Why weren't we given an immortal soul?" the little mermaid sadly asked. "I would gladly give up my 300 years if I could be a human being, only for a day, and later share in that heavenly realm." "You must not think about that," said the old lady. "We fare much more happily, and are much better off than the folk up there." "Then I also must die and float as foam upon the sea, not hearing the music of the waves, and seeing neither the beautiful flowers nor the red sun? Can't I do anything at all to win an immortal soul?" "No," her grandmother answered, "not unless a human being loved you so much that you meant more to him than his father and mother. If his every thought and his whole heart cleaved to you so that he would let a priest join his right hand to yours and would promise to be faithful here and throughout all eternity, then his soul would dwell in your body, and you would share in the happiness of mankind. He would give you a soul, and yet keep his own. But that can never come to pass. The very thing that is your greatest beauty here in the sea, your fishtail, would be considered ugly on land. They have such poor taste that to be thought beautiful there, you have to have two awkward props, which they call legs. The little mermaid sighed and looked unhappily at her fishtail. "Come, let us be happy," the old lady said. "Let us leap and bound throughout the 300 years that we have to live. Surely that is time and to spare. And afterwards we shall be glad enough to rest in our graves. We are holding a court ball this evening." This was a much more glorious affair than is ever to be seen on earth. The walls and the ceiling of the great ballroom were made of massive but transparent glass. Many hundreds of huge rose-red and grass-green shells stood on each side in rows, with the blue flames that burned in each shell illuminating the whole room and shining through the walls so clearly that it was quite bright in the sea outside. You could see the countless fish, great and small, swimming toward the glass walls. On some of them the scales gleamed purplish red, while others were silver and gold. Across the floor of the hall ran a wide stream of water, and upon this the mermaids and mermen danced to their own entrancing songs. Such beautiful voices are not to be heard among the people who live on land. The little mermaid sang more sweetly than anyone else, and everyone applauded her. For a moment her heart was happy, because she knew she had the loveliest voice of all, in the sea or on the land. But her thoughts soon strayed to the world up above. She could not forget the charming prince, nor her sorrow that she did not have an immortal soul like his. Therefore, she stole out of her father's palace, and while everything there was song and gladness, she sat sadly in her own little garden. Then she heard a bugle call through the water, and she thought, "That must mean he is sailing up there, he whom I love more than my father or mother, he of whom I am always thinking, and in whose hands I would so willingly trust my lifelong happiness. I dare do anything to win him and to gain an immortal soul. While my sisters are dancing here in my father's palace, I shall visit the sea witch of whom I've always been so afraid. Perhaps she will be able to advise me and help me." Thanks for joining us for Part 1 of The Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen. We do appreciate reviews very much, and here are a few recent ones for you. And now, 5 stars, Brenda from Big Rock, Illinois. "I love this podcast. Your voice and storytelling abilities are both soothing, entertaining, and professional. I'm a retired grandmother of 4 and enjoy sharing these wonderful short stories with my 4 grandchildren. Keep up the good work." That one from Ninja Grandma 1 via Apple Podcast US. And this one, "Love this podcast. 5 stars. Thanks for producing all this wonderful content. I love listening to the stories while I jam away on spreadsheets at work. As a huge Sherlock Holmes fan, I especially enjoy your retelling of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's stories." That one from Be Useful via Apple Podcast US. And thank you, Be Useful. And just to let you know, in case you're not already there, at 1001 Stories for the Road, we just wrapped up Arthur Conan Doyle's The Hound of the Baskervilles. If you haven't caught that podcast yet, you might want to go back and visit it. 1001 Stories for the Road. And this one, long overdue, 5 stars. "I've been a fan since close to the beginning, and I owe you a review. 1001 is one of my favorite podcasts. Thank you, Mr. Hagedorn, for your ongoing commitment to excellence. Your reading and interpretation are first rate, and I appreciate the way you take advice from listeners regarding writers with whom you aren't familiar. I love hearing stories I might not normally read myself. Way back before a podcast, I listened to audiobooks the same way. Thank you for introducing new material and for presenting the well-known classics. Your work is well appreciated." That one from Janine 57, Apple Podcast US. Thank you so much for taking the time to write those reviews. I appreciate it. Just to share with you fans, over the holidays, I caught the flu, something that's pretty rare for me. It kicked me in the head like a mule. I'm just getting free of that now, so please pardon the hoarse voice. We'll get back to whatever the usual voice is real soon, I know. Very, very soon. I not only caught the flu, but found myself unable to stand on my left foot just a few days ago. And that was another challenge that we had to work out. And I'm standing back on that foot. I was a soccer player for a number of years, and maybe it's old injuries catching up with me. So, for a rough start in 2020, it's all good news going forward. Hope it's the same for you. We'll see you all next Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.